Hey guys, it's Jess with a quick soundbite. I wanted to talk today about language and how it impacts our kids. Language obviously is very broad. I'm going to break it down into verbal cues that we provide and tone of voice. There's, like I said, lots of different areas we could go in this, but this is kind of where my head's at today. So first I want to talk about what we say. The verbal cues that we use and the phrases that we use with our kids matters. One of my favorite examples of this is the difference between hard worker versus good job. We're all guilty of saying good job. I still catch myself doing it all the time, but there's actually an abundance of research that tells us that when we praise a child for doing a good job, we are encouraging them to seek success, not challenges. And especially for our kids that we work with, we need them to be encouraged to seek challenges. So by praising them and telling them what a hard worker they are, how proud of you are for them working so hard while they're struggling, we are telling them you're a hard worker, and what a hard worker does is they persist with a challenge until they succeed. So we're actually encouraging them to seek out challenges. And like I said, our kids especially that we see, this is really important for. I made this switch very deliberately, and like I said, it's not 100%, nor do I ever expect it to be, but I did, when I first learned this, make the switch very deliberately with a particular patient of mine who was selective mutism, highly anxious, extremely sensitive to all sensory inputs, especially vestibular input, awful motor planning. I mean, she was like a sloth moving through space because mostly of fear. And she was trying to get into the caterpillar swing. And she couldn't do it, right? It's really unstable. You're trying to step in, but it's wobbly. And every time it would make her nervous and she'd give up. And all I did was I said, I'm really proud of you for working so hard. She kept wanting to be done. I said, okay, I'm so proud of you for working hard. And then every time I would say that, she would go back and she said, I want to try it again. And this was something from this girl that I had never heard her say, because usually I was pulling teeth trying to get her to keep persisting with something. Come on, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. The other thing I think to think about is we have to be careful about telling kids, this is easy, you can do it. I will never forget, I said this to a patient once, and I've said this many times to patients, and I probably still do it. Again, it's one of those habitual things that we say. I said this to a patient once, and he said to me, everybody says that, and they're always wrong. And I thought about that because how true is that for a lot of our kids, especially if they have any kind of learning difference? Attention difficulties, motor planning issues, things that we think are going to be easy for them, even if we try our hardest to make it easy, they are putting in a substantial amount of effort towards those tasks. And they're often then feeling 10 times worse about themselves because now they're realizing I'm failing and struggling with this task that you have just identified as easy. You basically told me you should have no problem doing this, and the fact that I'm having a hard time with it makes me feel like crap. And I said, that's a really good point because I was using this phrasing with him to try to convince him to try something. So I said, you know what? You're right. I don't know if this is going to be hard or easy for you. And I think that is a good approach to have with kids. You know, I'm not sure, but let's try it. And then let's have a plan. How do we get out of it? Why don't we try it? And if it feels too tricky, we'll just stop. You can just say, this is too tricky. I need a break. Or this is feeling really tricky. I want some help. I think it's a different approach and help them also practice how do I encounter activities when I don't know if it's going to be easy or hard. I think our kids who struggle often approach most tasks as if it's going to be hard, and they meet that resistance rather than problem solving and regulation. Another way that we use our language a lot to kind of guide our kids is the way that we talk about situations that are happening to them that impact their emotional regulation. I think a huge thing to think about, especially when you're trying to help a child make sense of emotions and maybe challenging events, is you have to go back and talk them through that narrative. I was having this discussion with a patient just maybe last month. We kept noticing with her child is that he had a very limited perspective on what was happening around him. And here's an example of what I mean by that. He was pushing the swing one day, and total tunnel vision. You could tell he was very self-absorbed this day. He was very dysregulated. He could not perceive anything around him. He was very tuned out of his environment. So he's pushing the swing back and forth, Oh, I'm sorry. I have this mixed up. He was laying on the floor. His sister was pushing the swing back and forth. Back and forth. And she had been doing this for a while. He never noticed it. He was off kind of in the corner, never noticed it, even though he was kind of close to her. He got up and walked right into the line of path of the swing, and it hit him. And his perspective is, you hit me with the swing. When the reality was, he walked into the swing, into a situation that had already been occurring before he got there. So we then used our language to cue him back through. That was really surprising. I bet that was really surprising. You know, when we said, your sister was swinging the swing, and then you stood up and walked towards it, and the swing hit you. So we kept using this phrasing back over and over and over to help him understand the full sequence, right? He only caught the last part of the sequence. He missed the whole beginning part of the sequence. So we're using our language to paint the full picture. So if you always think about, like, phrasing everything into a story for kids. I do this even with my own daughter, with her anxiety, or with, like, injuries. So she'll fall and bump her knee or something, let's say. And especially if it's something where it was kind of like, she sort of, it was almost her fault in a sense, which usually it is, you know, just flopping around or whatever and bonks herself. I might say something to her like, yeah, that was really scary, or that hurt, ouch. And as we're kind of calming down a little bit, then I might start to talk her through what I saw happen. Yeah, I saw you stood on that box and it was so wobbly and your foot slipped and then you fell down and you bumped your knee. So I'm painting this picture for her of what happened and also inserting these little sensory characteristics about kind of why I think it happened. That was a wobbly box. I don't know why on earth you were standing on it, but you did and your foot slipped. And this is what happens when we do these things sometimes, right? So we can use our language to shape their narrative and create a narrative for situations that have happened. But I think the really important one, especially for our kids with autism, is thinking about how are they perceiving these situations that are happening to them? And are they catching the full sequence, especially if they're not engaged? And the engagement can fluctuate. That example I gave earlier, you know, as a kid who normally was fairly engaged, like you wouldn't look at him and think, ah, he's autistic. But when he was dysregulated, he would go very self-absorbed. I mean, you could just look at his eyes and tell he wasn't connecting with you. He couldn't make eye contact with you. He couldn't focus on what you were saying. And a lot of our kids get like this when they're dysregulated, even like our ADHD kids. So they might miss a lot of information from their environment. So we can use our language in that way to help them. Then we have our tone of voice, the way we say things, right? And there's a lot we can play around here. One way I've been using this lately has been imitating tone. So I have a young man that we're working on some really, really foundational levels of engagement, like real, real low. And he comes in different days kind of stimming with his voice a little bit, but it's always a different frequency. Sometimes it's really high, and sometimes it's really low. And I've been trying to imitate it a little bit, maybe not to that extreme, but staying in a closer range, especially if I'm giving him verbal directions. So I might, or ask him a question. I might say, hi, down here, in his tone. And he's responding really well to this. Because I'm matching for whatever reason he likes this particular frequency. So you can always play around with imitating tone. And then we also have to think about how we're using our voice, because we can encourage attention this way too. So those lower frequencies tend to be calming and grounding, and they also draw our attention down or inward. So if we're trying to get attention down and inward, whether it's tuning into zipper or looking down at the ground at your shoe, look down here. Might bring them more down versus look at your shoe. That goes up, but your shoes are not up. High frequencies tend to bring our attention up. So if you want them to come up, if they're looking down at their shoes or something and you want them to look up at you, how are you today? Might bring their attention up. The thing you have to also be careful with this as well is that some of our kids have sensitivity to sound. And it can be particular to different frequency ranges. It's really hard to pinpoint what frequency, but you might be able to figure out if it's higher or lower frequency sounds. So some kids really cannot handle certain people's voices. I have a patient right now that the parent often says to me that, you know, when their child is dysregulated, they have a really hard time tolerating the sound of their father's voice. And I suspect it's partially the frequency of his voice. So if we can moderate that a little bit, that can help our kids regulate. and process information. The other thing is that often when we're trying to engage a child or we're playing with a child, most people have a tendency to go high frequency. And that can also, if you stay up there too long, can become a really irritating input. So sometimes just that fluctuation of up and down is better tolerated. And it also then grabs more attention. Instead of getting used to this high frequency up here, oh my gosh, hi, how are you? It's like, hi, how are you today? You can bring them up and down. And it's a little bit more sing-songy. One of my favorite examples of how we can use tone of voice to influence mood goes back to my days when I was a substitute parapro. I was working in a cognitive impairment classroom. A lot of the kids had autism as well. And there was two speech therapists that would come in and do group activities with the kids. And the first one came in one day. And, you know, the kids are sitting, like, all their desks are in a circle, and she's in the center. And she's doing, like, a cooking activity with pictures, like, pecs. And she's, hi, guys. How are you today? All right, good job, Johnny. Give me that. She's got a big voice. And even before she came into the room, I remember the other staff getting a little edgy. Like, they were like, I don't really like her. She kind of rubs in the wrong way. And the kids were distracted and whatever. They weren't really paying attention, and they're all over the place and kind of loud and getting dysregulated. And it didn't really seem like it was related to anything at that point. But then I remember the next time a different speech therapist came, and this lady had the most soothing voice. And she said, hi, kids. How are you today? Oh, good job, Johnny. And I kid you not, even the staff were calm, were focused on the session. It was set up the exact same way. These chairs in a circle and her in the center, almost the exact same activity, just a different recipe. All of the kids were focused and calm bodies. All of the staff were focused and calm bodies. I remember they weren't even like trying to do other stuff. Like they weren't like prepping lunches or the next activity. They were all stopped and focused on her. And we felt super calm. So it can have a huge, huge impact, especially for our kids who are easily dysregulated. But I think it's one that we don't notice unless you have a really, really direct comparison like that, which I was lucky enough to have that day. The other thing I want to touch on with tone of voice is firm versus gentle. And there is a tone we can convey in our voice, right, of when we're being firm and we're kind of setting a boundary, or we're being more gentle or silly. This, I think, is an important one to think about. And sometimes talk to about parents as well. When I worked with this kid once, and he was doing really well, like fantastic with me. He had some bumps along the way, but we got to a point where he was very well regulated. All the strategies were working, but everything was only working in the sessions and nothing was working at home. So finally we got to the point, I said, why don't we do some coaching sessions? And I said, I'm going to have you run the session. Here are the tasks we're going to do. And I want you to transition in between these tasks and run the activity and comment. And I'm just going to be on the sideline. I'm just going to jump in as needed. And I got to observe her. We also had done some virtual sessions. Thank you, COVID. This was also enlightening. I got to observe her interact with her kid. And how did she transition him and prepare him for tasks and direct him? And I started to notice that she was kind of like a very meek, quiet person. And she had a lot of anxiety herself, I think. She was very anxious about me putting her on the spot like this. But she also had a very gentle, soft tone of voice. And we had to work with her on her tone of voice. And I just said, when you're giving a direction, you might have to try to give it slightly firmer. And I'm not talking like a firm, like, okay, sit down or else. But a little bit more firm, definitive sound to the tone of your voice. Because he's not responding. And he's feeling like there's too much room to negotiate and to wiggle. And maybe in that moment, there's just really not. So that takes me to my final suggestion here, because this often comes up is when we're having trouble getting that carryover to home. One strategy that at least as of today, April 8, 2022, we can suggest a teletherapy visit. As much as they are cumbersome and difficult for, I think, everybody involved. And all of us were glad to come back in person when we did close a couple of years ago. The one benefit that sticks out in my mind is that I got to see kids melting down in their home environment, parents interacting with their kids and regulating their kids. And boy, was that enlightening. So if that's something, that's certainly something you can replicate in the clinic, but it's really easy to do virtually because you don't have to tell the parent to step in. They don't have a choice because they're there. And they feel much more comfortable stepping in because it's their home environment, their domain. And it forces you as a therapist to coach, which I think most of us feel a little bit uncomfortable coaching parents because we're basically kind of telling them how to parent in some way, or that's kind of how it feels. But then you don't have a choice, and it forces you. And when you're in that point where you have to find a way to comfortably speak up on something, I think that's a great way to do it. And as of today, it is still covered by insurance. So it's a great tool to use. It doesn't have to be every single week. It could just be like, let's do it every once in a while to check in and to work on certain strategies and to get some new insight. Those are my thoughts on language for today. And as I said, there's lots more we could go into on that. But if you have any other thoughts or comments, please let me know.